Thank you for joining us today. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. This is Dan Gowerthy.
And Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us. We're heard every other week here on KRBS 107.1 in Oroville, California from 8 a.m. till 9:55. And our program is also broadcast on WCRV 1540 in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us. And we're also heard on 106.1 FM KQRP in Salida, California. Thanks for joining us and listening to our program.
You know, Dan, every time you say that, I keep thinking, well, WKRP, of course.
Right.
But the other is SPQR, for the Senate and people of Rome. You know, if you were a fan of all those gladiator movies, as I was.
Kurt Douglas and Spartacus and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, and Now the more modern versions.
Gladiator, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they had another one that came out last year. My kids were watching it. Troy, or was it Troy, I guess, that came out?
Who's the Australian actor that's doing
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. He was in one.
He was in Gladiator.
Okay, yeah.
It was Gladiator. But there's another one that came out last year. I think it's called Troy.
But that's the Greeks and the Romans are...
Oh, that's true. Trojans and the Greeks. Yeah, okay, right. Yeah,
$400 or $500 difference.
Tom, have some more coffee and donuts, will you? You know, get rid of that nervous jammer they have over here. Anyhow, thanks for joining us today. And we'd also invite you to take a look at our blog on the internets. It's not the internet. You know, there's two of them because George W. Bush told us there's two of them. It's the internets, plural. It's located at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. Or you can do a Google search on us and type in LTOBS and do that. Tom, by the way, you know, somebody, you know, I look and keep an eye on how people find our blog on the internet, and somebody actually did a search to find us on the internet, and they put KRBS, and our good friend and associate at the station's name was in the search queue two or three times in one day, Kathy Popa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Kathy, you know, somebody out there is looking for you, and they found this. So if they come knocking at your door at 3 or 4 in the morning with a search warrant, well, you know, they may not even come with a search warrant. Don't say, don't blame it on us, okay?
Well, there's one other thing. Is if you're searching for KRBS, Gowerthy, NATO, felonies, that's a different one. That's not us.
You know, it's funny. You know, my just a little incidental story. Yesterday, my wife went to lunch with one of her coworkers. And they kind of struck up a friendship, and they went to lunch and they started talking, and somehow the topic of politics came around. And
these days, I can't imagine.
I know. And it turns out Jenny's coworker and her lunch mate was very liberal, so she promoted our program with us. And Jenny, this is bad, Tom. Jenny couldn't remember our blog address, so she says, well, just go on the internet and type in our last name, Gowerthy, and you'll find it. You know, and it is true. You know, my name comes up there.
I got something to add to that when you're done.
Go ahead.
No. I was, every so often you do a vanity search.
Yes.
You know, your name, you know, my name. So I searched my name, and I'm way down in the queue, you know, because there's a bunch, back east, there's a whole bunch of NATOs. Anyway, but I type in Gowerthy. There's only one Gowerthy in the world. It's Dan Gowerthy, Dan Gowerthy, all the way down. Not one page, not two pages, not three pages, four pages. And I want to know, either you're the only Gowerthy or you're the only literate Gowerthy.
I think it's the latter. Although, well, I shouldn't say that because some of my, our correspondent, Uncle Buck Weaver, who writes for LTLBS, but he's not a Gowerthy. He's a Gowerthy by marriage, and he's literate. He writes for us. But I get, you know, it's a double-edged sword because now I'm out there. People can find me. You know, I can't, you know, hide and, you know, and be obscure from the public because once your name gets on there, it's on there forever, I think, you know, like it or not.
Well, so I decided I was putting on our blog little entries that weren't very long and were mostly clips from other stories.
Right.
I was just putting my initials. Well, that's stopping. My name's going to come up more often, or I'm not going to be famous.
Well, you know, just a little self-promotion here. A few weeks ago, I was checking the sources of people that come to it, and we actually had one of our stories linked from on the Washington Post, actually, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Remember, I called you real excited? But Tom, that was the time you should have put your full name, because you just put TN. You could have said, hey, I've appeared on the Washington Post.
Well, I'm saying it anyway.
Right. Yeah, well, you did, actually. So.
Semi-verifiable.
Anyhow, let's see. Last hour, we tore apart Scalito, Alito, Fitzgerald. Who else did we tear apart? Oh, we talked about...
connected.
We threatened the Democrats a little bit to grow some spines. So let's move on to the next thing. Talk about growing spines. Our discussion is evolving here.
That's
right. Okay.
Or in some cases, devolving.
That's the common accusation against us. Actually, there is a case that just last Friday went to... was in court, and there's going to be a decision on it. It's the intelligent design trial in Dover, Pennsylvania. And apparently in this case, the school district in Dover, Pennsylvania, and this has been going on for a couple of years, the Board of Education decided to teach intelligent design, which is a many people, including myself and Tom, would argue, and many scientists would argue, that it's nothing more than the theological approach to science, because it's not really science, it's theology. Anyhow, in Dover, Pennsylvania, some time ago, the Board of Education decided to teach intelligent design as a counterpoint to Darwin's theory of evolution in science class. 11 parents have contested it with the help of the ACLU to have that removed from the science curriculum, arguing, and I agree with it, that it's a modern form of creationism and the shell game to really inject theology into public schools. So this went to trial yesterday.
This is like having the option to 2 and 2, not coming to 4, but something else.
Right, intelligent design. But, Judge John E. Jones, who's the judge in this case in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Pardon?
Wasn't he a Martian?
Martian? I don't know.
John Jones. Wasn't he that comic book character who was a Martian?
Tom, different era than me.
No, okay. Different comic
book. Different comic book. I was partial to Archie comic books. Yeah. You know, Archie, Jughead, Moose, and those guys, those brats at Riverdale High. Anyhow, this case came to a conclusion Friday in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And Judge John E. Jones will basically decide whether or not to remove the teaching of intelligent design from the science curriculum in the Dover area schools. And this is really indicative, I think, this case of, and it's going to set precedent, obviously, because if Judge Jones decides that it's okay to teach it in science class, of course, it's going to be appealed, but it's going to give the green light to all the right-wing Christian fanatics. And that's what they are. These aren't mainstream people, you know, from mainstream churches. These
are wedging the door.
Yeah, I mean, these are people that really are trying to push an agenda down the throat. And we'll get to our defense on this in a minute. But this is going to be a very important decision. The right wing really, really wants this. They want to do away with science, and I think it's, even beyond that, personally, I think it's a part of a broader movement, a broader goal to really dumb down public schools so they can kill public schools, further justify the use of vouchers to really push us towards a theocracy in this country. I think that's really, if you really tear it down like you would a sentence, I think that's really what you're getting at here. It's a part of a broader movement to tear public schools apart, dumb down schools, and then move money that would otherwise go to public schools, because they can say, oh, these kids aren't performing very well, and move it into school vouchers, which would which basically means the religious schools. That's really, I think that's what's at stake here in the long run with this, Tom.
Well, you gave this to me. Do you want me to read some of this? Or?
No, you just so you'd have a reference for it.
Oh, yeah. This is a sidebar. Doesn't have anything to do with anything except it applies something to do with this. Mm-hmm. Is the Dover, right?
Dover.
Dover, Pennsylvania.
Right.
But there's also Dover, New Jersey.
Right. And there's Dover, Delaware, too.
Dover, Delaware. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Dover, New Jersey was the home place of a buddy in the Army.
Yeah.
His name was Michael
A.
Borchin.
Michael Borchin?
Michael Borchin.
Okay.
But the middle initial was A. Michael. So what do you think all the guys
mad.
Mean?
Mad.
Abortion.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, it was another topic here. But anyway, the there's one part, a paragraph in here that really stands out for me. Emerging around 1987 and championed by the Discovery Institute, a Seattle think tank, intelligent design makes no mention of the Bible or the divine. Well, first of all, this is not a think tank. It may be a plotting tank.
Well, the another thing that I found interesting in the story, and this was we got this story from the Seattle Times, was a somebody who was defending the intelligent design theory in the trial by a gentleman by the name of William Buckingham, who backed the, and I'm reading from the story, who backed the intelligent design plan, said in one meeting that the theory should be taught because, quote, nearly 2,000 years ago, someone died on a cross for us. Shouldn't we have the courage to stand up for them? I mean, Tom, that's enough justification for me to gut science programs and put this in there. I mean, he said it. I mean, that must be true.
And why he didn't mention the 3 p.m.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, this is all sort of made up, I think.
Well, you know, the whole part of this, and I mean, this is so silly. This stuff is so silly, but I think it's really part of a broader movement to gut public schools. I mean, we see it all around it. We see it here in California with...
There's an old saying among lawyers. If you got the facts, go with your... There are facts in the law. If you got the facts, go with the law. If you got the law, go with the law. But if you don't have either one, pound on the table and shout like hell.
Right.
And this is what they're doing. Is they're creating all kinds of smoke things all around to create some kind of controversy over legitimacy of that or the possibility of that, when in fact it's just a smokescreen.
Right. And just to prove to our listeners, it's plural for listeners, and internet should be singular, right? Mm-hmm. Just get this straight in my mind. Okay. For our listeners' sake, just to show that we're not crazy, you know who agrees with us in essence on this, Tom? Take a guess. Take a stab at who agrees with us that fundamentalist Christian beliefs shouldn't be mixed with science, aside from our esteemed guest, frequent guest, Dr. Robert Ulanowitz. Who else agrees with us, Tom?
This agrees with us?
Agrees with us.
Does this, and higher up the evolution scale?
Higher up the food, higher up the food chain.
Wags its tail?
Wags its tail. It's a big, 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 big organization. Almost as big as the mafia.
I think. It is the mafia. It's the Vatican, maybe the Pope.
Bingo, you got it. There's a story we found in the International Herald Tribune, and the title of the story is Cardinal Urges Catholics to Heed Modern Science. A Vatican cardinal said Thursday that the faithful should listen to what secular modern science has to offer, warning that religion risks turning into fundamentalism, those are his words, if it ignores scientific reason. Cardinal Paul Pappard, who heads the Pontifical Council of the Culture, made the comments at a news conference on the Vatican project to help end the, quote, mutual prejudice between religion and science that has long bedeviled the Roman Catholic Church and is part of the evolution debate. So there, you know, the Pope, or not the Pope, but I guess de facto the Pope, and the Church, at least the Catholic Church, agrees that. And the story goes on to, you know, say that, but and this is quoting the Cardinal Pope Pappard. We also know the dangers of a religion that severs its links with reason and becomes prey to fundamentalism. He said, "The faithful have the obligation to listen to that which secular modern science has to offer." Just as we ask them that knowledge of the faith be taken in consideration as an expert voice in humanity. And that's really, that's well stated. You know, and we go back to our guest on our last show, Dr. Ulanowitz, who's a scientist, and who's a person of pretty strong faith, and he basically said the same thing. So this just isn't you and me sitting around here cooking this stuff up and concerned about it. The Vatican's also concerned about this because I think they have a long enough history to see what happens when you mix the two of them. And I think, you know, frankly, and I know I'm beating a dead horse on this. I've said it 3 times already. This is just an attempt to, like you said, for one thing, to deflect attention from other things. And the other thing is just an attempt to dumb down our schools so a theocracy can be introduced into our country. I think that's part of a broader plan that these people have. Just like 30 or 40 years ago, some of the stuff that's happening today, they started working on 30, 40 years ago. They're starting to work on this stuff today. And if they're successful within this intelligent design case, 30 or 40 years, if we're still here, we're going to see the fruits of that stuff come to bear for them. So, anyhow, I've barked enough about that. Tom, do you have some lighter stuff there? Because we still have some 15 more minutes in this segment, and I know we're going to talk about conspiracies.
Where's my?
That one about the tea.
Oh yeah, right.
This is a good one.
Speaking of religion,
we're on our religion segment here.
This comes out of Melbourne. And the Melbourne, that's Australia.
Right.
They're on the other side of the equator.
Yes.
So everything's upside down there. But anyway.
Is it true that the water goes the other way
exactly.
around?
It is.
I think that's an urban myth, Tom.
Anyway, the Melbourne Herald Sun of November 2, 2005, had this short story. An obscure religious sect today pleaded with the first or the second of this month, with the U.S. Supreme Court not to ban the import of ayahuasca, a hallucinogenic tea from Brazil, for sacred use in its rituals. The 9 Supreme Court justices must decide whether to side with the U.S. government, which argues the tea is harmful, could be diverted to recreational drug users,
woo-hoo!
And is barred by an international treaty. This treaty you want to observe. The other one there about the war, we don't want to observe that one.
Forget that. This one, we're going to watch it. You got to keep an eye on this.
Can't violate that.
Tom, you know why? It's a national security matter here.
Exactly.
National security, Tom.
Or they may hold that a 1993 U.S. law on religious freedom means that the church, and this is the name, O Centro Espírita Beneficente Unia do Vegetal.
Well, is that Spanish, Portuguese, or Latin?
Well, I think it's Portuguese, and it's the central spirit of the beneficial uses of vegetables.
Okay.
That's my translation.
That's pretty good, Tom. I'm impressed.
Deserve an exception for the tea, which believers feel brings them closer to God. The church...
Hey, that's their religious belief. They're entitled to it.
Hey, good for them.
Yeah.
The church is an unusual mix of Christian and indigenous South American spiritual beliefs and has around 130 members.
Whoa, that is a small group.
In the United States. They must have more down there. UDV rituals involve sipping ayahuasca tea made from the roots of 2 indigenous Amazonian plants in communion.
Okay.
The case arose in 1999... 6 years ago, when U.S. Customs officers intercepted a shipment of brewed ayahuasca liquid from Brazil. Write this? 136 liters, which is a little more than a liter for every one of the members of the United States.
Okay, this is like having a liter of beer in the bag, you know, right?
Was seized from the home of, get this, okay, so I love this, Brazil... Amazon, you know, Portuguese,
right.
Indians,
Latin in
and indigenous.
Catholicism.
From the home of Jeffrey Bronfman, the head of the church's American chapter, and a member of the famed Canadian whiskey-making business family. Now, why would they be suspicious? I have no idea.
Well, this story is it's really funny on many different levels.
And I guess 131 of the ayahuascas, one in Canada, and 130 in
Well, this story, if you think about it, it's funny on several different levels. First of all, Bronfman, they own Seagram's spirits.
I think they sold portion.
Yeah, they sold portion of. I'm not sure, but they're the founders and they owned it for several years. You know, this guy Jeffrey Bronfman, presumably, if he doesn't practice it, their family's Jewish. So, what's this about? Then they're a spirits company. Is he coming up with a new brew?
What? And how long did it take him to find 130 people to drink that crap?
Well, it's a hallucinogen, so maybe they're putting together a new, drink for the American public.
I mean, 129 of them live in San Francisco.
Right. But Tom, it's a hallucinogen, so, you know. We don't know anything about
The peyote, for the Indians, we say that they should have that, so if that works for them, then let it.
Well, yeah, I don't have any problem with that. Mind you, I really don't have any problem with that. But what I'm getting at is that maybe the Bronfman family, I don't know if they're still, they have Seagrams or whatnot. Maybe they're going to start a new enterprise, and they're going to, this is like a James Bond theory.
This is like a cartoon. Okay, so you got it. He's Jewish. You know, Bronfman's Jewish.
Jewish.
So I can see him, you know, trying to come in the country.
Right.
Going through the checkpoints, and he's got a yarmulke on, right? And they strip search him so they can see he's circumcised, and he's talking about Huasca, which is my native Amazonian, yes, step over there.
Right. Well, that, or they could be concocting the, the more diabolical part of me says, you know, who's this? Is this guy part of the Bush administration? Is he trying to get this brew together, inject it into the public water system to hallucinate everybody? I mean, serious. You know what I mean? This story works on so many different levels, Tom. So many different levels. Anyhow, you're listening to what you got there. Oh, I keep banging. I'm sorry, Mariana. I'm just kind of excited this morning. Too much caffeine. I just want to remind our listeners.
I gave you those donuts to calm you down.
Right.
That's sugar.
I'm bouncing off the wall now. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. By the way, my name is Dan Gowerty, and my colleague is
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us today. Anyhow, that story is kind of funny, Tom. That works on several different levels. You know, I know we have somewhere buried in this mess here. Some quotes from you're doing a heck of a job, Brownie.
Yes.
Where is that thing?
Let me check over here.
Okay, as Tom looks for this, you know, we're in a peculiar age right now. We're in an age where, in my lifetime anyhow, I have never seen so many scandals, corrupt officials, and on top of that, not only do we have corruption and scandal, we have inept people, a lot of inept people in government.
Ineptly
top of the
corrupt.
List, or near the top, they're corrupt and inept. I mean, it's one thing to be corrupt if you're smart, but some of these people are not only corrupt, they're inept. At the top of the list, or near the top of the list, is good old Michael Brown, the former head of FEMA, who my understanding is, Brownie, who George Bush said, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job, is still drawing a salary of $148,000 a year. Wouldn't you love to have that? I mean, really.
Don't do
who
anything.
Who wouldn't want that?
Just don't show up at the office. Just, we'll send you the check.
But before you read that, I just want to say one thing. I've said this on this program before. It kills me. I don't know how many times I've interviewed politicians who've gone back into politics or who left politics to go to the private sector. They're making congressmen, you know, they're making $200,000 as a congressman, and they say, well, I got to leave government service because I got to go on the private sector so I can make some real money. Hello? How many of us are making $200,000 a year? Anyhow, go ahead, Tom.
Well, I'll come back to that after this, but there are two items actually here that sort of fall into the same category. Michael Brown, we just explained, he's the guy who was FEMA chief who didn't do so very well.
He did crappy during the Katrina. He didn't do anything.
And so after being
call it as
praised
it is,
by
Tom.
The president, okay, it says now things have, this is like an update, okay. On September 12th, Brown resigned 10 days after president told him, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Heck of a job.
Brownie, or Brown, is still on the federal payroll at his $148,000 annual salary. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff saying Brown's expertise was needed as he investigated what went wrong. He needed to keep him, you know, like as a captive witness is what he is. You know, don't leave the town, you know. Anyway,
right.
Malincon, I think that's how you say his name, said in the midst of the overwhelming damage caused by the hurricane and enormous problems faced by FEMA, Mr. Brown found time to exchange emails about superfluous topics, including problems finding a dog sitter. So these are quotes from these. This is right in the middle of people dying.
I shouldn't be laughing. People are drowning, dying, starving. There's pandemonium, and this guy's worried about a dog sitter.
Melancon is the investigator. And he said that on August 26th, just days before Katrina made landfall, Brown emailed his press secretary, Sharon Worthy, about his attire, asking, tie or not for tonight? Button-down blue shirt? A few days later, Worthy advised Brown, please roll up the sleeves of your shirt, all shirts. Even the president rolled his sleeves up to just below the elbow in this crisis. And on TV, you just need to look more hardworking. The appearance is much more important than the fact.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And on August 29th, the day of the storm, Brown exchanged emails about his attire with Taylor, another person in his office. Melancon said, he's reading from this, she said, you look fabulous. And Brown replied, I got it at Nordstrom's. Are you proud of me?
These are emails they're exchanging. God, anyway, that's so, unbelievable.
An hour later, Brown
really
added,
it isn't, I guess.
If you'll look at my lovely FEMA attire, you'll really vomit. I'm a fashion god.
And then, wait, he really said these are in emails that, man, unbelievable.
But anyway, we're talking about him being appointed by Bush. Well, there are some concerns about Bush going around right now. We've talked about this a little bit more. They're saying, this is an AP story, I believe, by Doug Thompson. I
think let me preface this by saying that two or three shows ago here, we mentioned... With no evidence. Well, it was a story from the National Enquirer, which is...
A more reliable paper. There
has been more reliable than one would think. Actually reported that Bush had hit the bottle again. So keep that in mind. So go ahead, Tom.
Okay.
And we at the time we said, keep an eye on this story because it's going to
go someplace. Yeah, this will build.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
It's saying an uncivil war rages inside the walls of the West Wing of the White House. A bitter, acrimonious war driven by a failed agenda, destroyed credibility, dwindling public support, and a president who lapses into Alzheimer-like periods of incoherent babbling. On one side are the dwindling numbers of diehard loyalists to President George W. Bush, who those who support his actions and decisions without question and remain committed to both Bush and scandal-scarred political advisor Karl Rove. On the other side are the increasing numbers of those who say Rove must go and who worry about the president's declining mental state and his ability to restore credibility with Congress or foreign allies and the American people. I'm almost done here. It says the war erupted into full-blown shout fests at Camp David this past weekend, where decorum broke down in staff meetings and longtime aides threatened to quit unless Rove goes. Insiders say Chief of Staff Andrew Carr now leads the anti-Rove legions and has told Bush that he wants out of the high-pressure job. White House staff members say the White House is like a wartime bunker where shell-shocked aides hide from those who disagree with their actions, and the office pools speculate on how long certain senior aides will last. Bush, whose obscenity-laced temper tantrums increase with each new setback and scandal, abruptly ended one Camp David meeting by telling everyone in the camp to go yourselves before he stalked out of the room. Huh? Senior aides describe Bush as increasingly itchy or nervous or unfocused. They say the president goes from apparent coherent thought one moment to aimless ramblings about political enemies and those who are out to get me. It's worse than the days when Ronald Reagan's Alzheimer began setting in, one longtime GOP operative told me privately this week, the reporter he told. You don't know if he is going to be coherent from one moment to the next. What scares me is the lapses into one of his fogs during a public appearance.
There you have it. I mean, it's starting to happen with this guy. This guy is degenerating quickly, you know, and...
You have a picture that runs with this.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll pick up on this story. We'll continue this story because there's another interesting piece that we read on the internet by Paul Krugman that
kind of ties into
this. We're going to take a quick break now. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Monday on KRBS from 8 until 9:55. And we're also heard on KQRP in Salida and WCRB in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. We'll be back with you in just a minute. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street.